This is episode 137 of Beyond the Bulletin, published on September 2nd, 2022. Hello and welcome to episode 137 of Beyond the Bulletin. From the University of Waterloo, I'm Brandon Sweet, editor of the Daily Bulletin.
And from Media Relations, I'm Pamela Smythe.
On this podcast, we go beyond the pages and pixels of the Daily Bulletin to inform you about important news and views from our community.
Coming up, Maeen Gunn Henry, the Faculty of Health's first Indigenous Knowledge Keeper. We discuss Indigenization, reconciliation, and his role at Waterloo.
New episodes of the podcast come out every week, and you can find our archive of past shows and helpful links on the Daily Bulletin website. Please recommend us to your colleagues and connections at Waterloo. Thank you for joining us as we go beyond the bulletin.
So I had a very successful resource fair at the new faculty orientation. I shouldn't say I should say we, because I was at the Beyond the Bulletin booth.
I was there in spirit, I'm sure. So how did it go?
It was good. I met quite a few people. I met a lot of staff members, too, who also had booths and tables. So that was good, talking about the podcast. Just getting to know colleagues, it's good. And I also got to meet several faculty members. It might be good to have this sort of resource fair for everybody.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, for sure. Now, here's what's been happening. The University of Waterloo is changing its provider for extended health and dental benefits from Canada Life to Green Shield Canada, effective January 1st, 2023. This change came about after the university's Pension and Benefits Committee decided to review the long-term disability extended health and dental benefits provider market to ensure the university was getting the best price through an RFP, or Request for Proposal, process back in June of 2021.
Following an extensive review of the proposals, the committee approved engaging Sun Life Financial to ensure the long-term disability benefits effective on May 1st, 2022, and Green Shield Canada to administer the extended health and dental benefits beginning in January.
So Green Shield Canada will match the existing extended health and dental benefits plan design in terms of maximums and co-insurance and that sort of thing. However, every benefits provider has differences in terms of administration that they apply to the adjudication decisions and so on. So HR is currently working with Green Shield Canada to identify these differences relative to the Canada Life arrangements, as well as any options that might be available to the university to manage the transition or to support ongoing claims management.
To support this upcoming change from Canada Life to Green Shield Canada at the start of the winter term, HR has created a benefit implementation website to inform the university community on this project, including key milestones, important announcements, and essential action items that you and any current benefit plan members in your family must complete to support the change. We'll put the link to the site in our show notes.
In the coming months, HR will be hosting a series of information sessions with Green Shield Canada for the various stakeholder groups. More information on that is coming, so check your email inbox, via the HR website and social media, and of course the Daily Bulletin, for more info later in September.
In the meantime, Canada Life will continue to provide reimbursement for any eligible expenses incurred up to and including December 31st, 2022.
Single and Sexy, a staple at orientation, has exited the stage after a 31-year run that saw it performed in front of more than 100,000 students, staff, and faculty. In its day, it was seen as a radical and edgy presentation of scenarios and attitudes that first-year students may witness or experience as they started their university journey, and didn't pull many punches or shy away from difficult topics. It was performed from 1988 to 2019 and became an integral part of Waterloo's orientation experience. But the curtain call comes for us all. Campus Wellness, who has produced the play with student input over the years, has announced that it was time for a conceptual shift, given changes in the climate and culture of student life, especially during the last 2 years of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Students may have experienced undue consequences from the pandemic, including loneliness, isolation, anxiety, and/or depression, amongst others.
With that in mind, Campus Wellness embarked on consultations with WUSA, the Student Success Office, students, staff, and key campus stakeholders this spring to develop a substantially revised script to showcase the play's mission, vision, and values for 2022 and beyond, including a new name, which is TBH, To Be Honest, which premiered on Thursday, September 1st in the Physical Activities Complex.
TBH, To Be Honest, will continue to follow students through a year at a glance and includes issues such as homesickness, consent, academic integrity, imposter syndrome, and features many supports for students. However, in an effort to embrace students, the new play is more uplifting and welcoming than its predecessor, and has a strong theme to build connections and develop resiliency while attending university. We look forward to TBH continuing to be a highlight of orientation this fall and into the future. I always thought Single and Sexy was kind of clickbaity anyway.
Well, I mean, it certainly grabs your attention, right?
Time for a refresh, I think.
But a 31-year stretch of performances, that's pretty significant.
Yeah. I remember seeing one of the actors from Single and Sexy later on campus, and I was like, I'm in the presence of a celebrity.
Well, what's really funny is that a short while ago, I got an email. The Daily Bulletin received an email from a former Single and Sexy cast member saying that... I'm now a teacher of, intermediate students or whatever, elementary school students. My picture is now, was from the Daily Bulletin in about 2006, as part of a cast photo. So it's kind of awkward. Can you please take it down? I guess the students were Googling the teacher's name.
Yeah. Kids that age too would be very interested to know what Single and Sexy was.
That's right. So, yes, we've replaced that photo with a little banner that says photograph removed by request, and we all moved on with our lives.
Well, why do you do that?
Oh, because I want there to be evidence that there was a headline photo. Actually, yeah, we should get King Warrior holding a sign that says, oops, somebody asked us to remove a photo. I'll talk to athletics about that.
Error 404. Do that.
Now, here's what's coming up. On Thursday, September 22nd, the university will make a formal commitment to indigenization, decolonization, and reconciliation with a special ceremony that is the first of its kind on a university campus.
The event will begin with a sunrise ceremony at the Ceremonial Fire Grounds at United College, formerly St. Paul's University College, at 7 a.m. Maingan Henry, Indigenous Knowledge Keeper for the Faculty of Health, will lead the ceremony.
The festivities will then move to the BMH Green at 10:30 a.m. and will feature Indigenous drummers and dancers, a cedar circle, a smudging ceremony, and an address of thanksgiving from Bill Woodworth, Elder in Residence for the Faculty of Engineering.
Elder Henry will then make a formal request to President Vivek Goel for a full commitment to reconciliation, indigenization, and decolonization, which the President will answer on behalf of the university. There will be a pipe ceremony and a formal exchange of gifts, including an eagle feather and a wampum belt, followed by a soup and bannock lunch. The event is open to the entire university as well as the broader community. We hope to see you there. Check university social media and the Daily Bulletin for more information about the ceremony, its particulars, and its significance in the coming weeks.
Speaking of significance, the University of Waterloo will celebrate the life and legacy of President Emeritus Douglas Tyndall Wright with a special event on September 23rd. President Emeritus Wright, who served as the University of Waterloo's first Dean of Engineering from 1958 to 1966 and as Waterloo's third President and Vice Chancellor from 1981 to 1993, passed away on May 21st, 2020. As his death occurred during the pandemic, the university was unable to properly mark his passing in a significant way. This fall, in collaboration with the Wright family, Waterloo will honor the legacy of Douglas Wright, his achievements, and how they relate to the university's future at a special Celebration of Life event on September 23rd at 11 a.m.
The special event will feature remarks and tributes from President and Vice Chancellor Vivek Goel, Dean of Engineering Mary Wells, and other university leaders, former colleagues and students, distinguished community leaders, and members of the Wright family. The event will also include live music and video tributes and will be live streamed on YouTube. The live stream is open and available to all, and no registration is required. We'll put the link in our episode show notes. You know, I'd also like to direct people to my interview that I did with Ken McLaughlin shortly after Douglas Wright's passing. Ken, of course, is historian and distinguished professor emeritus, and we spoke about the legacy of Doug Wright. And we'll put the video on the Beyond the Bulletin playlist on the university's YouTube channel and put a link to that in our show notes as well.
And finally, it's hard to believe, but we've made it to September.
I think I say this every year, but it's really shocking.
It sneaks up on you every single year. So calling the first weekend of September the Labor Day long weekend is appropriate because the work that goes into creating campus community certainly goes up a notch or two this time of year. And as we speak, we are in the throes of orientation and move-in. Campus housing move-in takes place between September 1st and September 4th, and we'll see thousands of new students flock to campus to move into residence.
Orientation began on Thursday, September 1st for international students and is being followed by campus-wide and faculty-based events for undergraduate and graduate students, running to Saturday, September 10th. Orientation events are designed to help prepare first-year students for academic, cultural, and social success and cultivate a sense of belonging and pride in the university community.
And of course, Monday, September 5th is Labor Day, a holiday, which means that many university operations will be closed or operating under limited capacity during orientation. Check the Friday, September 2nd issue of the Daily Bulletin for information about what's open and closed over the long weekend.
And don't forget to enjoy your long weekend as well.
And now the interview. As the Faculty of Health's first Indigenous Knowledge Keeper, Maine Gun Henry provides strategic leadership to the faculty and its response to the Truth and Reconciliation calls to action. He is a former chief, advisor to the Ontario Provincial Police, and elder at other post-secondary institutions. In the interview this week, he shares what motivates him and his goals for his role at Waterloo.
I'm so pleased you could join me, Maine Gun. Welcome to the podcast.
Ani Wujo. It's nice to be here. I'm just excited to share this time with you and talk about some exciting things.
Me too. How would you describe the function of an Indigenous Knowledge Keeper?
Well, you know, if we go across Canada, you'll get various definitions of what that is. So we're defining it here in a way that we think is comfortable for this university. And I think the function of a knowledge keeper, to reflect on the various nations that live in a region. We have Métis and Inuit and First Nation people. And if I can kind of get the university to start looking at perspectives that maybe they've overseen in the past, but I think my role will be to try to energize this university on some things that weren't discussed for many years here.
Like what?
Well, I guess when you look at indigenizing anything, it's talking about our beautiful mother, the earth, and everything that we do in life depends on how well we treat our mother, the earth. I think we need to at least include an opportunity to see how we maintain our relationship and keep her healthy for generations to come. So that's kind of like what I'm trying to do. I'll lead ceremonies, to the certain extent that I can. There's different nations that live in a region, so I can't do some of the ceremonies that other nations do. But we'll do sunrise ceremonies. We'll do smudging ceremonies. I'll do healing ceremonies right in my office. We do naming ceremonies. So there'll be many things that we do here.
Can you explain what a naming ceremony is for people who don't know?
Well, for an Indigenous person that, you know, has endured things like residential schools in the past, and a lot of our ceremonies were taken away from us or we didn't practice them, we might have been persecuted for the fact that we were. So now we're regaining a lot of these ceremonies once again, and people are wanting to know what their spirit name and their clans are and their natural colors are. And so a naming ceremony is that. It's seeking out their traditional name, and maybe if their clan is needed, we'll find that too. The way that these are done is through a pipe ceremony, I'll interact with the spirits, with our creator. And then when creator is kind enough to bring that message back, I just become somebody who delivers that back to them. They already have a spirit name. They just don't know it. It changes their lives because, you know, you're searching for your role here on this earth. And sometimes it takes a long time to figure things out like that. But if you have your spirit name early, then it takes out a lot of the guessing and challenges that you might have trying to search for things. So you know who you are. And especially if you know your clan, you know your characteristics, you know what it's easier to make decisions in life when you know that.
That sounds like the role of an elder. Is that what the role you're filling?
Well, that's a high word to live up to, but I definitely perform those duties as an elder, and I'm honored to do that.
Now, I can see you because we're talking on a web chat platform, and I see you're holding a wing.
Yeah, I got my eagle feather here. It's you know, all these years of learning and trying to understand things, there's a lot in my brain here. And when we have conversations like this, I don't know where all that comes from or where it's stored. So the eagle feather helps me define that. And it gives me some strength to know that the eagle is helping me even in a day-to-day conversation. So I hold the feather in honor of those warriors who fought, you know, to keep our traditions alive, and the eagle feather represents them. So it helps me in conversation and helps me to remember things.
I understand. What inspires you in this work?
Life inspires me. Like, I know what we've gone through, and I know the history that, you know, was put upon our people. But to be able to recover some of that and to help an institution or people to see something they haven't seen before, it inspires me because I want to learn more. And a lot of our elders are getting to that age now where they're leaving this world. And the more that I sit with them, the more I feel that they're trying to present something so that I can carry on the legacy of Indigenous knowledge. And one thing that I want to tell you that it really inspired me mostly, a community member just outside of our nation called our nation and said they found some bones in their backyard. So I went over and looked at them, and I just had a feeling about those bones that they might have been like relatives or something. There was a draw to it that made me feel that way. And we both agreed that they would bring the archaeologist in, and they wouldn't take the bones, but they would examine them. And they identified those bones to be Indigenous bones of 3,500 years old. So we did the honorable thing. We buried them back into Mother Earth where we found them. But nobody touched those bones. Like the archaeologist, they had gloves on and they examined them, but they didn't touch them. I was the only one to have touched these bones with my bare hands. And at that moment, it was like they were speaking to me from their day on this earth about the knowledge, about the things that they dreamed about and thought about. And as I was putting them into the ground the way that we're supposed to back to our Mother, the Earth, it was like an honor. It was like a gift was given to me to take the knowledge that we have and to utilize that knowledge so everybody, you know, learns by it. Non-Indigenous and Indigenous people alike need to know why these are important.
What an experience. Looking at the strategic plan for the Faculty of Health, goal number 3 is to, quote, learn as a faculty how to appropriately build indigeneity into our mission. How do you feel about that goal?
You know, it wouldn't be that long ago we wouldn't have heard those words at an institution. I think me growing up, I'm 62 now. I'll be 63 soon. And I've been in a couple of battles in my life, Wounded Knee, South Dakota, Ipperwash, Oka battles. And during that time, we were fighting for people to understand Indigenous people. We were fighting to keep our ceremonies alive because we were considered the vanishing race for many years. So we come in to know ourselves a little bit more now. Our population is actually increasing. So I think for a strategic goal to bring in indigeneity, you know, and making it a mission, it drew me to this. You know, I could have stayed where I was working before. I was comfortable, but knowing the people want to learn, and they put it right into their strategic plan. Well, the reason I left my last place, because they didn't put it into their strategic plan. It was eliminated. Indigenous people were not even spoken about in the strategic plan. And we spent 13 years there trying to develop it so that it becomes a priority. And I was very unhappy with that. But when I looked over here and seen the strategic plan, not just in this faculty, but across the university, they really want to try their best to indigenize the university.
I raise it just because it was in the media that you were at Conestoga College before you came to the University of Waterloo. You were in Oka, Ipperwash, and Wounded Knee. Can you elaborate a bit on your experience there?
As a young person, product of residential schools, both my parents went there and maybe wanting to take us away from the culture because of how they were treated at those schools. Mm-hmm. I found myself at a young age wondering what Indigenous people were fighting for. I end up knowing that there was an incident happening in South Dakota, and I was pretty young at the time, But our community in Detroit wanted to go there and support the efforts of keeping the culture alive. So I end up going with a group of people from Detroit, and I was immersed in our culture, like smudging ceremonies and prayers and pipe ceremony. And it wasn't like the battle that was drawing me there. It was the spirit of the people. And every single battle that I've been to, Oka, Ipperwash, the battle was the last thing we wanted to do. It's coming and uniting ourselves through ceremony, which was the draw for every single battle that I've been in my life. You know, the last thing anybody wants to do is fight. But when it comes down to it, you almost have to at some point. So I seen those incidents that I've been to as such a rewarding opportunity for me to come to know who I am as an Indigenous person. Yeah, we have to battle sometimes, but we also come together in prayer and thoughts and good things too.
Is that when you first became more immersed in your culture?
It's probably the pivot point in my life. We always went to powwows. We always knew we were Native, but because my parents didn't really push that in our family, it was always from external sources like powwows or different elders. So, and then around that age when I went, it really became more entrenched in who I am. Yeah, and so I'd say that was the biggest point in my life to want to understand my own culture.
How old were you?
12.
Now, getting back to what you were saying before about how you maybe wouldn't see the word indigeneity anywhere in any institution's strategic plan, what do you think is informing the change?
Society has been, I'm going to say, mistreated in terms of the history of Indigenous people. Nobody was taught the true history in the way that Indigenous people seen it. It was always taught by the settlers and how they acknowledged taking of the land, you know, over through power and force and will and gut, but not necessarily how the Indigenous people seen we shared the land with people, because I guess our first reaction to the settlers was they probably are sick, or they're probably hungry, or they need shelter. You know, we actually wanted to help the people, and and our first relationship was about peace and friendship, and then it became more dominant over our people, and then we got disguised within history because they wanted to reflect on the power that they had to overcome a continent that they learned to explore. And so this is why I'm here, to try to change that way of thinking so people can really understand the history that they have a right to know.
Well, as part of that strategic plan of the Faculty of Health, it goes on to say that to achieve this goal of building indigeneity into their mission, the faculty will pursue these objectives, creating new opportunities for Indigenous faculty, enhancing Indigenous student recruitment and outreach, supporting decolonization, cultural education opportunities for faculty, staff, and students, and finally, to support or create, enhance an environment that invites and respects Indigenous ways of knowing. How would you describe your approach to encouraging that sort of environment for people who maybe are not familiar with it?
Well, those words that you just read was a bit of a challenge to me, because the way that I seen it was, why bring indigenuity into a university or Indigenous students into a university to transform them into the way the mainstream operates under an educational system? So that part was something I have to work on here, because we don't want to encourage Indigenous staff, students to come here and just protect the way that institutions teach today. We want to change it so that it includes an Indigenous focus on many of the things that they're teaching. So I had to wrestle with that a little bit.
But I guess that's why it also says supporting decolonization.
I hope that they've really understood what that word means, because, you know, we have buzzwords that we use and they sound nice, but to really decolonize a place is to disacknowledge everything you did to the Indigenous people. And that includes finance, that includes curriculum, you know, inclusion, that includes everything that's going to make that change. So if you're using indigenize or decolonize, that's a real deep-rooted meaning, and we have to collaborate and agree on what that means to the institution and the Indigenous community.
The faculty invites and respects Indigenous ways of knowing. What does that look like?
Well, I'm going to find out, because faculty might have a section that they teach on Indigenous knowledge, but where are they getting that information from? Or is it accurate? Or is it continual stereotypes that we've always come to know about Indigenous people? So my evaluation, which I'm doing now, is all about that. Like, where are you getting this information from? How do you understand it? It's relevant or real? And I'm not saying I'm an authority on everything, but I just want to make sure that it's done with, you know, consent of Indigenous people.
Is there a reason why you'd want to be part of the Faculty of Health in particular?
That's more my area. I work as a traditional healer, and some of the methods that I use for traditional healing is really different from Western medicine. And I think what I need to do here is to include in the Faculty of Health some of the ways of understanding healing from an Indigenous perspective. I love science and I love research, but there's a spiritual element to healing too that sometimes goes amiss when we're teaching about medicine and in healing practices. So I'm going to include that in everything that I do, you know, like, let's balance it out with how we understand healing to be.
Well, the faculty is home to global leaders in tobacco research, and tobacco has great importance in Indigenous culture. How might these two perspectives successfully coexist?
Well, we've demonized tobacco to a point where it's become a recreational tool for people. But when we influence the understanding of tobacco, which is a sacred medicine for us, in fact, it was the first medicine that humans came to when we came to the earth. In Ojibwe teaching, the earth was created perfectly and in harmony. And then the last part of creation was to bring humans to the earth. And they put us right next to the tobacco plant to use in our ceremonies. Remember when I said we do naming ceremonies and things like that? You have to pass tobacco to a person who does those ceremonies. And they use that tobacco to ask Creator for those things. So tobacco can, I always tell people very clearly, it could save you or it could kill you if you use it in the wrong manner. So I need to make sure that this understanding of tobacco has the respect of what that medicine does, but also have the respect of what that medicine can do if you don't use it properly. And we see health issues arise from people's unhealthy use of tobacco.
Do you have a separate area where you'll be doing smudges and ceremonies?
That's high on the list. We have to open this door to help people understand of how it can be beneficial. In fact, well, if we look at the laws today in Ontario, the only thing that's exempt from the tobacco law is pipe ceremonies. So there's a section within the Ontario Smoking Act, I believe that's what it's called, allows for ceremonial use of tobacco. So we're exempt from the same regulations that would regulate smoking in a building. If I'm doing it in a spiritual manner, then it's fully legal.
What is the approach that you take to get changes made that you would like done?
The way that I do things is through relationship. So you have to kind of be strategic in everything you do, how you get the best results out of that. And I learned that from a man named Elijah Harper, who you might have heard about before.
I've met him.
Oh, did you?
I used to live in Winnipeg. I used to work at the legislature.
He was a great friend of mine. I seen his mild manner, you know, open doors really wide just by being the way that he was. And I kind of mimic him in a lot of ways. I'm still friends with his wife. We still talk quite a bit.
Can you just explain, just for people who are from a different vintage, maybe, who may not even know what the Meech Lake Accord is, could you please explain Elijah Harper and his contribution?
Well, I always tell people this. One particular province, Quebec, always felt that they were special. They had a special reason for being a distinct province because they kept their French culture alive. During the time, 90s, Canada was really considering giving them special acknowledgement as a province here in Canada. And it had to go through the system. All the other provinces had to endorse it, you know, so it was a process. And for some reason, in some very unique reason, it came down to the legislature in Manitoba, where an Indigenous man happened to be Elijah Harper. He was part of this process to make the decision on whether that was approved or not. And Elijah knew what happened to the Indigenous people. So he bravely, you know, against all types of pressure for him to push this through, held an eagle feather up and said no. The most important thing is here, and ironic thing here, was it happened to land on an Indigenous person's opportunity to to say no. Yeah. How ironic would that be, you know, in Canada? We had no Indigenous people hardly in politics at that level, but he just happened to be there and he made that decision. And he's a hero today, you know, to that generation. And I teach about him in my course, so I want everybody to know who Elijah Harper is.
And so the Meech Lake Accord did not go through.
Exactly.
What else would you like to share?
Well, I'd like to, well, this might be hard for you to understand, but Bujo Mayingan and Dejnikaj Deshkanzibe no Jabak Mayingandodem Getche Manado Chimigwechmin Waka Kinna Mandaganaj Wangij Get Nongum Getche Manado Chimigwech Minwaka Kinna Wesiak Mampi Getche Manado Chimigwech Minwaka Kinna Wabanung Jawanung Epping Nishmoki Wade Nung Getche Manado Chimigwech Minwaka Kinna Ningo Dodemoin. I wanted to say that because that language was against the law for us to use. Not too far in our history. To smudge, to dance at powwows were against the law. For us to get a post-secondary education was against the law here in this country. For us to join the military was against the law here in this country. And for a Native woman to marry a non-Native man, she lost her status. But if a Native man married a non-Indigenous woman, she gained full status as a Native person. These are things that I think Canada needs to understand. So I like to tell people, let's open up these conversations. And what it'll do, it'll stamp out some of the racism and stereotypes that we have because they only come from people that don't understand. And this is where I want to go with our conversations, you know, all the time, of why we have treaty rights, why we all sign those treaties, and why we all have to live up to them.
Well, I'm glad that you spoke to me in your traditional language. Was that Ojibwe?
That was Ojibwe, yes.
I understood Miigwech, yep. But I didn't understand anything else. You're right.
I thank Creator for everything. It was almost like a little prayer that I gave thanks to this beautiful life that we have.
Thank you for that. And thank you so much for being here at the university and here with me today. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much. It was appreciated.
Well, that about wraps it up for us this week. To ensure you don't miss an episode, please subscribe to the Beyond the Bulletin podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And please recommend us to your colleagues and Waterloo alumni.
You can find us on Twitter at UW Daily Bulletin. Select interviews are on the university's YouTube channel too. Just look for our Beyond the Bulletin playlist there. You can reach us by email at bulletin@uwaterloo.ca.
Because it's a shortened week next week, the podcast will take a break and return on Friday, September 16th. As always, thanks for listening as we went beyond the bulletin. You know, calling it a shortened work week as opposed to a long weekend, actually, you know, it feels better, doesn't it?
I don't know. Six of one, half dozen of the other.